I am Joseph James, the chairperson of the Public Service and Administration Portfolio Committee and chairing the interview panel as well. Could you please confirm what is contained in your CV briefly, because we do have your CV. Put the mic on.
Thank you, Chair. As indicated, Chair, my name is Mpumusi. I have an LLB degree, and I also have a master's in public management. I think I started my career in the SA Navy, and I've been in the public service ever since. And I think, Chair, from the work that I've done that is contained in this video, I think that I would be willing to be considered for this position.
The Public Service Commission has a constitutional mandate to promote the values and principles of Section 195 of the Constitution. Briefly, what is your understanding of the functions of the Public Service Commission and the values and principles governing public administration?
Thanks, Chair. I think the values that I referred to in the Constitution refer to transparency, accountability, and usage of resources efficiently and effectively. And Chair, the Commission itself is responsible to, it's empowered to ensure that the Public Service Act is monitored and implemented. I think the key issue is that the Public Service Commission is critical or regarded as a democratic institution that is supposed to ensure that public service in general is conducted in a manner.
Apologies,
it's
just that the member is coughing, so I just asked them to switch off the mic. My apologies.
Thank you.
Okay.
It should be done in a manner that does not allow one corruption, does not allow any influence from outside. So it's regarded as an independent institution that should not have any political influence in it. And I think we've seen it also, Chair, in the court rulings that have come out that it should be regarded as an institution outside of government. So key to their responsibility is to investigate complaints that are received, and they can also investigate on a court the public service practices that are there, or grievances that arise from an act being done or an omission not being taken by the employer.
Thank you. The members of the panel are also going to ask you some questions, but they will introduce themselves before they ask questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and welcome, Ms. Mosi. My name is Maina Lesoma, member of the committee. Having gone through your CV and also listened to the second part of the chairperson's question, within the same spirit, but noting that you have partially responded to my question, I'll start with the preamble of the question. The Public Service Commission, among other functions, is aimed to promote the values and principles governing the public administration and to give directives or direction aimed at ensuring personal procedures comply with the principles of public administration, as it were. May you, on your own words, ma'am, take us through your understanding of the Public Service Commission making an impact in the public service, and how can the public service reposition itself to make an impact given its wider mandate of promoting the values and principles of governing the public administration. The last question from my side, ma'am, will be which is not linked to my preamble, a standalone one, will be constitutionally, in your own understanding or your own thinking, do the spouse and children of the political representatives or public representatives and former members should be prevented from doing business with the state? Provide the merit of your answer and provide possible solutions as far as you may be concerned. Thank you very much, Chair and Madam.
I think thanks for the question. I think the key thing about the values for the first question is that the public service is required to execute its functions without any fear, favor or prejudice. And I think that's why also we have a court case that indicates that the Public Service Commission is an independent commission and should be outside of government. It's so to ensure that when the Public Service Act is applied, that is applied by people that are integral, and that the values that are in the Constitution, which set or seek to ensure that poverty is eradicated, as well as the fact that there's equality in the country. So I think with that, then the Act gives the Commission the power to issue directives. And it can be on any aspect, can be on issues of recruitment, the issues of appointment, or any other issue that is captured in the end. Referring to the second question, where I think the Honourable Member spoke about the spouses and the children of people that are in, I think, Honourable Member, the Act seeks to address issues of financial disclosures by members of the public service. I think the key reason for that is so that the Commission would be able to assess any interest and be able to assess if there would be any conflict of interest. And I think in my view, Chairperson, if in an ideal world, if all members of the public service were disclosing their interests, that then it shouldn't necessarily be a problem where the children and the spouses are part or are doing business with the public. I think it becomes an issue where, as a public servant, you have influence on how they receive business or how they do business with the public. But as indicated, if you have disclosed your issues and your interests as far as internal, then the assessment would be done to assess if your interest would really result in conflict of interest.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Ma'am, I'm Miriam Gibby, a member of this panel. My first question is, the Constitution directs the public service to be professional, accountable, and developmental orientated, and the NDP further amplifies this constitutional directive by identifying specific steps that need to promote the values and principles across public administration. Now the question is, what is your understanding on the vision of professionalizing the public administration in the country? In your response, Gemma, could you please distinguish between cadre deployment based on the meritocratic and mediocratic into the public administration? And what could be the role of the Public Service Commission in ensuring professionalization of the public administration is instituted or institutionalized? My second question to you would be, maladministration and corruption are cancers so ingrained in the public service, has become the new normal, and it's impacting negatively on the development in this country. Now, the question is, what causes corruption and how can the PSC play a meaningful role in preventing, reducing and curbing corrupt practices in the public service? Can you also please indicate current weaknesses in the system and propose your solution in your response? I thank you.
Thank you. Okay. I think to firstly address the first question, I think we are now the country goes and technology advances, and you know, that there's a need for us to look at future skills. I think the NDP clearly indicates that if as government we do not look at future skills and ensuring that the generation now that is going to be coming into parliament is well skilled, that we would find ourselves wanting in as far as the objectives of 2030 are concerned. I think the key issue that is raised, it has to do with a capable state and a developmental state. I think the NDP is very clear that in as far as SA is concerned, we have excellent and capable legislation, and it's the implementation that is now required. And if, for instance, you were to take the issue that relates to disclosures in the public service, one would ask why are SMS members not disclosing, and there's solutions to that, because we as South Africa, we have CIPC, for instance, which registers companies and directors, and we've got statistics per se that deals with states. And if we were, for instance, if I can be technical, when we take whatever database that the CIPC has and run it against now public services, it would be a corrective action from our side as Public Service Commission to ensure that whatever that the both database, when you run them, they will give you results that these are the people that should have disclosed, and then you can run that information with the disclosures that are already received. that gives you a proactive manner of dealing with it, and then it also puts you at a position where you are able, as a choice of a component, take disciplinary action or whatever action that is required. And I think that would assist in dealing with corruption in itself. And the corrupt practices, I think corrupt practices, they are wide. It's in tenders, in appointments, in, you know. And I think for me, Chair, the PSC, if you look at the legislation, especially where appointments are concerned, we rely mostly on a grievance or a complaint that would come in, and there's no proactive measure for us to deal with those particular issues. And if no one has put in a grievance or put it to light that there's something untoward in the process, then we proceed with the process. So I think firstly is to ensure that in as far as appointments are concerned, that there's a proactive role or structure that is played by the PSC. I think also in awarding of tenders, it would be the same argument. And I think, Chair, we haven't necessarily used the resources that we have in as far as systems are concerned. And I refer to statistics as because they have the systems that would be able to assist government in as far as statistics are concerned. And the future skill that we're referring to is that future skill of actually looking at the data and being able to deduce the information that is required from the data. We have the hotline, corruption hotline, that is being assessed by, or it's been managed, not assessed by the PSC. I think the indication from the IUR report was that they received around 66,000 calls, and of those, they had 882 complaints that stemmed out of it, which indicates that as far as the anti-corruption hotline is concerned, that it's working. Also, we refer to the disclosures again, and we refer once again to, I think, the delegation of appointments by management, that where a delegation needs to be given, that they should be given for such appointment. Then we assist Chairperson with the role of the reporting, that when you report, where do you report, and, you know. And further to that, I think the NDP says that it makes the recommendation that in the presidency there should be a structure that would assist the appointment of HODs in government, so as to ensure that the people that we place in those positions are people that are well-skilled, well-experienced, and that the mandate it stems from that institution is aligned with their profession. So I think those are the suggestions that I would put in place. So in a nutshell, I would say an MOU with statistics, because they would be able to give us statistical readings. From those statistical readings, then we can deduce the information that is required, and also with other institutions that, like, I think they already have an MOU with the public protector. So I think it's workable.
Bitola ke mzwa ke sibese I would have two questions. I would read a statement and then ask the question thereafter. Statement for first question, Iri. Professionalization of the public service can happen as a function of the meritocracy, which is a system of appointing or promoting staff based on the knowledge and skills. The question is, as a commissioner of the PSC, how would you advise government departments to institutionalize meritocratic ethos in the administration of the state in order to achieve professional public service? The last question, very short. How do you think the PSC can strengthen its own oversight and strengthen oversight by Parliament? Thank you.
thanks, Chair. I think on professionalism, I think it's going back to what I had indicated earlier, that the loop, I'll call it a loophole, the legislative loophole that PSC comes in at the end is something that needs to be corrected and something that needs to be attended to. I think the fact that there's that suggestion means that public service actually sees that there's issues in as far as appointments are concerned. I think, Chair, South Africa has a lot of skills. That's why at certain points when we have to do things, we outsource them. So we outsource to people that have the know-how. So I think it's the know-how that we need in government. We need to be attracting those skills inside. And we can only attract such skills if our processes are not influenced by anything other than knowledge, skill, and experience in that position. You asked how would one strengthen the oversight? I think it's going to require legislative amendment. I think there's a number of principles and recommendations that are in the NDP. The structure that is suggested in the presidency for appointment of HODs is one of them to strengthen. And also for the PSC to be able to do their monitoring and evaluation aligns to the principles of the Constitution in all spheres of government. And I think, Chair, also the independence of the institution is very critical, because if the institution is not independent and outside of the public service, then there tends to be a lot of interference in as far as appointments are concerned. I think and as far as Parliament is concerned, Chair, I think what is already there is working. I think it's a matter of just ensuring that the Commission has full powers that are very, very clear in as far as the mandate is concerned and execution of their functions. And with that, Chair, I think we would be able to reach professionalism because we would attract the right skills and development. And on development, training. I think the current challenge is that training in the public service is too general. And for instance, where there's a specific skill that is required, that the training doesn't necessarily look at those particular skills. So it's too general. So if, for instance, you were to be appointed as the HOD, for instance, of whatever component in government, there should be specific training that is given to you to deal with the public service and how to execute the functions. And I think it's also one of the recommendations that are set out in the NDP.
Thank you, Ms. Simpson. There's a member of this panel who's not with us now, Honorable Clark. She is on the virtual platform. She's going to ask you questions as well. Thank you, Honorable Clark.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, ma'am. My name's Michelle Clark and I'm a member of this panel. Firstly, the first question is it believed that a responsive, ethical and values-driven public service depends on, among other things, the investigative function of the PSC on public administration malpractices, particularly in the areas of irregular appointments and curbing of corruption in government departments? First question, how can the PSC strengthen its role of investigation of unethical conducts and play a meaningful role in assisting government to curb corruption in public administration? The next question, the power to appoint in South Africa is found by Section 3, Subsection 7 of the Public Service Act. Ministers or MECs can delegate the power to officials within the departments. One, what are the major obstacles in the recruitment system in the public sector? Is the public sector recruitment system effective in order to ensure professional and a capable state? Two, what can be the role of the PSC in eliminating unethical practices in the recruitment system in order to ensure public servants are appointed based on merit? Thank you.
Chair, I think when I was going through the roles for grievances and for lodging a complaint, I think one of the key issues that I realized was that although the steps are set out very clearly in the document, there isn't fees that are aligned to those steps. And I'll explain. If, Chair, we want to ensure that rules are applied, compliance is at its highest level, we have to have some penalties, some form of penalties, where a grievance has to reach a certain stage without people with authority working on it. That should attract some form of a penalty. And I think that, Chair, would then change how compliance is done in South Africa. I think the member raised an issue that obstacles in recruitment and how PSC would deal with these obstacles. I think it goes back to what I had initially said, Chair, that you can't have a regulator that comes in at the end of the process and not start with the process. So I think we need proactive measures at the beginning for appointments. And I think there was a question that related to cater appointment. I don't think there's anything wrong with cater appointments for as long as the skills are commensurate with the mandate and the work that an individual has to undertake. And in as far as obstacles in the recruitment process, I think that's one. I think secondly, Chair, is that to augment now the issue that there isn't a proactive measure the law sets out that one can lodge a grievance or a complaint, and that's meant to augment. But I think with the process of legislation, that would have to be considered. Responsive. Yes, Chair, I think that's where I would end on that question.
Thank you, Ma'am. Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Osi Magomani. I'm the member of the subcommittee. My question would arise from the public monies and the corruption, and my first statement would then be: there's a huge loss of public money due to corruption, especially with public servants doing business with the state. Notwithstanding the question that you answered to Honorable Lesomo, I would ask you that, in your opinion, how could public servants be stopped from doing business with the state, since there is legislation already preventing this practice, yet it still goes on? Thank you very much.
And I'm sorry, Chair, if I'm going to sound like I'm repeating, but I think as indicated, maybe I'll elaborate a little bit more. There's a unit called ADAPT in Statistics SA, and they are able to adapt systems. They use a statistical system called SAS, and they're able to adapt SAS to manipulated to giving you the information that you require. So as earlier I said that I would have an MOU or an MOA with the CSA as well as CIPC. That is to take the information that CIPC has and run it in a system of the CSA against personal numbers that we have in the public, and whatever information, Chairperson, that would come out, it would be information that would be telling you that, in as far as these ID numbers are concerned, because it would be statistical information, these are the people that should have disclosed, because you can find them in this CIPC where directors are registered. And with that information, Chair, it then leads you to saying, one that is found to be on the list and has not disclosed, then disciplinary measures can be taken. I think that's where we need to start, Chair. And having been found not disclosed and doing business with government, it's a financial disclosure. So I would think that financial disclosure that has not been disclosed would lead to mistrust between the employer and the employee, and that is really a dismissible offense, and that's how I would respond to it, to say that would be a proactive measure that I would put in.
Is there any question you want to put to the interview panel?
No, Chair.
Yes, at all. Okay. Thank you very much, Ms. Musin. Of course, we are not done yet with the interviews because we have a number of people to interview. You will be informed of the results of your interview. Thank you very much. You may be released.
Thank you, Chair.